From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the first day of December 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett at AgMarket.net, hear about the agricultural news, especially things happening in Washington, D.C., talk with Dr. Michael Cordonier about prospects for total production of corn and soybeans in Argentina, and check in on the agricultural weather forecast. Also in Argentina with Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather, right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn for the day settled at $6.50, down 12 cents. The March at $6.60.5, 6.5 lower. And the May futures at $6.59.25, down 6. January soybeans, 39.75 lower at $14.29.75. The March at $14.36.75. Down 38.75, and November beans 29.5 cents lower at $13.69.5 a bushel. Bean meal up $3.20 at $420.90, and soybean oil at $68.40, down $6.83. Wheat futures soft red at $7.58.75 a bushel, down 12.75. The hard red at $9.03, down 10.25 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished at $155.42.5, down 25 cents. Feeders were up 60 cents at $181.07.5, and lean hogs per 100 pounds at $89.20, up $3.85. Crude oil at $81.03 a barrel, up 47 cents. Diesel fuel at $3.25.8, that's heating oil, down a dime and a half. And the wholesale price of gasoline today at $2.34 a gallon, about 4.4 of a cent lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Matt Bennett at AgMarket.net now joins us to talk about what's happened in Chicago. Hi, Matt. Thank you very much. We probably better get straight to this. U.S. EPA announced its RVOs, Renewable Volume Obligations, for the RFS for the next 3 years. This is the first time that's done. It's part of the legislation because it does not sunset. It just passes over to the EPA more completely. That's now the case from 23 going on, 2023, that is. They have proposed a 15 billion gallon RFS for, relatively speaking, conventional or corn ethanol for next year, 15.25 billion for both 2024 and 2025. But it was that part which dealt with advanced biofuels and renewable diesel in particular that really tanked the marketplace, I think, along with other things. Can you talk about what you saw during the day today?
Yeah, there's no doubt that the trade didn't really perceive this as being positive news. I mean, we've got to remember this is preliminary, though. It's just basically something that's up for debate, and we won't get any real clarity on exactly where we're going with this probably until summer time frame. But the other thing that was probably factoring in is that you're looking at pretty good rainfall across Argentina. Argentina's been awfully dry, talking about some heat coming in over the next few days, but then all of a sudden the forecast has started to change to where over the next week to 10 days they may get 2 to 5 inches of rain. And so that changes the complex of really of everything. Not only you going to have a little bit of weakness in the bean market, but you saw just absolute weakness, I guess, with soybean oil due to the RFS that we're talking about. It's just really hard for beans to be able to get their head above water with what was going on today. It was kind of impressive, in my opinion, that corn didn't follow along any more than what it did.
I will make note that I'll discuss this with Scott Irwin after he gets a chance to take a look at it, but his preliminary review suggested the opposite, relatively speaking, of what the trade saw as it's related to renewable diesel. They, and I saw some press releases on this, were really concerned that this would put a limit on the ability of renewable diesel to be produced in the United States economically. However, it appears that at this point, and Scott thinks that's not the case, that it should be good for renewable diesel. Did the folks at JSA have anything to say about this?
Yeah, I mean, some of the guys that we work with at JSA, Ag Market Sister Company, they're talking that over the long haul, they see it as a win for renewable diesel as well, and that it basically is tipping the cap to supporting that infrastructure that's going to continue to be built. It sure looks to me like that's the direction that the industry is heading, and this legislation, if it would happen to pass, as they're talking, could very well be supportive towards renewable diesel. So, I've got to think that moving forward, it's probably got as good of a foothold as anybody, especially considering the reduction in carbon emissions, that you're supposed to have as far as renewable diesel is concerned. And it's pretty exciting, that you can use almost 100% of the formulation of soybean oil. So I think moving forward, that could be a real feather in our cap. But again, these are all preliminary numbers. And obviously, not everyone agrees on how they're supposed to be, actually digested. So I think that there's a lot that's going to be learned out of moving forward. And after it'll be really interesting to see how the market kind of reacts after such a big drop today.
Yeah. So what are the expectations for the overnight trade?
I would say the overnight trade is likely to be thought of as at least bouncing back a little bit. You would think you're going into the weekend, but at the same time, like I said, Todd, I think there's a lot of eyes on this Argentine weather in southern Brazil. The rest of Brazil has been in really good shape from a weather standpoint. And when you're talking about 3 to 4% extra acres, there's no doubt that you could be looking at a real increase in production down there. 150 million plus ton crop is what a lot of folks are calling for at the present time, and that'd just be a monster. So, if the weather stays good down there and Argentina gets better and you're not as worried about soybean meal out there on the world market as what we have been lately, then I think you could certainly be looking at some pressure on this bean market.
Should farmers take today as a warning or a caution that on the next up move that they really need to finish off the 2022 soybean sales?
That's a great question. First of all, we always make the assumption there's going to be a next up move, and one of these days there's not going to be. And so, you've got 14.31 on the board. I mean, good night. I mean, that's just a heck of a price. I know we've had some awfully good opportunities, but just this week, we saw Nov 23 back up to $14. Heck, just today it traded to 13.99 before we took a bath. But I think we need to be paying very close attention. These are awfully good values for both corn and beans, but especially when you're looking at beans and you're looking at this potentially large crop out of the southern hemisphere. I think we need to be managing as much risk as what we can. I want to put a flexible floor in, have a worst case scenario locked in with the ability to participate if the thing moves back higher.
Can soybeans roll over in corn because of the short supply in the United States, very tight ending stocks, remain steady?
I could see that potential happening. I think that if beans would take a $1 to $2 hit, which is always a possibility, that it would be darn near impossible for corn to hold or tread water. But at the same time, I do think, relatively speaking, corn's likely to perform just a little bit better than soybeans, especially if you see the South American weather for this first crop anyway, continue ideal for Brazil, because that's going to be a big factor moving forward on world supply.
USDA uses current policy when it develops the world agricultural supply and demand estimate. Because this is a proposal, the RFS, that is, from EPA, it won't be, I don't think, in next week's numbers. Will they change very much?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know that they will change a whole lot. In my opinion, they'll probably continue with status quo, especially considering, like I said, Todd, this is a, it's not like we saw some legislation passed through Congress or anything like that. It's simply just some proposals that were floated out. Obviously, a lot of times we stay very close to those proposals. They get discussed moving forward, but I really don't expect that the USDA will make any big adjustments there.
Thank you very much.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
That is Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. One other note, this on the rail strike during his press conference earlier today with the French president. President Biden was asked about the legislation now working its way through the Hill. He does expect to sign it by the weekend, although he does not expect it to include paid leave. In today's agricultural news, the House voted yesterday 290 to 137 to avert a national rail strike. However, it did include a controversial paid sick leave benefits package In a separate bill, there was bipartisan support for President Biden's request to impose a tentative September deal the White House brokered, but was rejected by 4 of the 12 rail unions. Missouri Republican Sam Graves warned without action that the railroads would sideline hazardous chemicals a week before the December 9 strike deadline.
Anhydrous ammonia is one of those things, and if you live in a rural state, or you live in a very agriculture-dependent district, right now is the time when anhydrous is being applied.
But the debate grew testy after Speaker Pelosi added a second bill giving rail workers 7 paid sick leave days they could not get at the bargaining table.
It is outrageous that every developed country in the world has paid sick leave except the United States of America. No one should be at risk of losing his or her job by staying home when sick, needing to see a doctor, or getting life-saving surgery.
Graves argued the freight rail workers already get 3 to 5 weeks of paid leave and that the tentative deal gives them a 24% pay raise plus insurance benefits. The paid leave bill passed 221 to 207 with all but 3 Republicans voting no.
This last-second desperate move to add paid sick leave is it's unprecedented congressional intervention, and it goes far beyond what the freight railroads and the unions originally agreed to.
The Senate plans to act quickly and could send the strike-averting bill to the president even if it doesn't pass the extra days of paid sick leave. In other news from D.C., a group of Midwest lawmakers this week introduced the Consumer and Fuel Retailer Choice Act. The legislation would ensure permanent full market access to E15, often marketed as unleaded 88. The National Corn Growers Association applauded the legislation. NCGA President Tom Hague says the legislation will ensure drivers across the country continue to have year-round access to safe, low-cost, low-emissions E15. Senator Deb Fischer, a Nebraska Republican, and Amy Klobuchar, a Minnesota Democrat, introduced the bill with 13 bipartisan co-sponsors. And finally today, McDonald's this week filed a lawsuit against pork packing companies alleging price fixing. The lawsuit names Agristats, Clements Food Group, Hormel Foods, JBS USA, Seaboard Foods, Smithfield Foods, Triumph Foods, and Tyson Foods as defendants in the case. Legal documents show McDonald's claims the defendants and their co-conspirators collectively control over 80% of the wholesale pork market. The lawsuit alleges the defendants entered into a conspiracy from around 2008 or early 2009 through the present to fix, raise, maintain, and stabilize the price of pork. McDonald's claims defendants implemented their conspiracy by agreeing with their competitors to restrict output and limit production. The lawsuit says that the data compiled by Agristats is a classic enforcement and implementation mechanism of a price-fixing scheme. Because of the alleged price-fixing, McDonald's claims it paid inflated prices for pork during the time frame outlined in the lawsuit, adding thus plaintiff suffered injury and damages due to defendants' anti-competitive conduct. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Michael Cordonier, Soybean and Corn Advisor. He's out of Hinsdale, Illinois. Thank you for being with us. You have dropped your yield predictions or total production predictions for Argentina. Can you tell me about what the conditions are like there and what you're hearing that caused you to do such?
Yeah, well, in Argentina, you know, the soybeans were only 19% planted as of late last week. That's 20 points behind last year. And November is the prime planting month. So only about a quarter of the crop is going to be planted during November. And the soybeans are going in extra late, and the weather does not look very promising. They got a few showers last couple of days, but the longer-range forecast calls for some very high temperatures and some drying conditions. So the soybeans are going in late, and there could easily be some germination problems and stand problems for the soybeans. Now, for the corn, you know, the corn was only 24% planted as of last week, and they did not plant all the early planted corn that they intended. Now, the later planted corn They'll start planting that, you know, this week or next week. But it's dry in many areas, and it's hot as well. So three-quarters of the corn is going to be planted very late, and there's probably going to be some germination and emergence problems with corn, especially in drier areas. So Argentina started off problematic, and it just continues to be problematic. And I think the forecast looks worrisome going forward. So yeah, I trimmed both corn and soybeans, and might trim them some more. Depends on the weather.
Will Brazil make up for those losses, do you suppose?
Now, Brazil soybeans can make up for those losses. The soybean area increased about 4% in Brazil. And actually, CONAB keeps finding more acres for soybeans in Brazil. So, yes, Brazil can make up for Argentina on the soybean side. Now, on the corn side, it might be more difficult. You know, the early planted corn in Brazil accounts about a quarter of the whole crop, and that's not doing very good right now. There's some dry areas down in Rio Grande do Sul, southern Brazil. But three-quarters of Brazil's corn is safrinha production, planted after the soybeans. And you never know about that. It's a risky crop. So I think it'd be harder for Brazil corn to make up for the corn losses in Argentina. On the soybean side, Brazil's so much bigger, three times more soybean production than Argentina. So Brazil could make it up on the soybean side. But corn is still remains to be decided.
Do you think USDA in the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate report on Friday of next week will update the S&D tables to reflect the changes you've talked about?
Well, they should. They're way too high, I think, on the crops in Argentina. And, you know, back when the last report was issued, it was still, no, they're still planting. But now we know that the planting has been very delayed in Argentina, and the weather hasn't improved hardly at all. So I think they will trim their estimates in Argentina.
What do you think the global balance sheet looks like at this point, and what concerns do you have, whether they're bullish or bearish?
Well, I would say, I don't know the actual numbers are going to be, but I would say there's more opportunity maybe for the corn balance sheet to get much tighter, because you had problems in Western Europe, and you had problems in Ukraine, and we had a okay corn crop, wasn't the best corn crop in the world, and now you got maybe a problem in South America. So I think the corn balance sheet could get tighter. And then for the soybeans, you know, they come up with the new biofuel requirements and all that sort of thing. So, you know, that might, you know, encourage some higher soybean prices as well. So I think both crops could do a little bit better price-wise. We'll have to kind of wait and see how the weather develops in South America.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
That is Michael Cordonier. He is with Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois. You can find him online at soybeansandcorn.com. On this Thursday, let's check in with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us today. Can you begin in South America? We'll work our way northward from Argentina, where they have been suffering a drought for a very long time. Can you recap some of that and tell me what it looks like today?
Yeah, and this is one of the worst droughts that they've seen in a long time. If you look at weather records going back about 40 years, you'll see that the last 7 months and the last 3 months were each the driest of that entire period. And that's across the key provinces of Buenos Aires and Cordoba, which are the main producing regions of Argentina. So we're starting out very dry throughout the winter and the spring, and now we're about to start heading into some of the more important periods of development. Now, that being said, there are a couple of things to keep in mind. Number one is that soybeans are only about 25 to 30% planted as of today. That is far behind schedule, though. They should be closer to halfway planted. And the reason planting is behind is simply because of the lack of rain to this point. Corn is also having some problems. But the thing about the corn crop is that they essentially plant about 25% of it over the last month or two. Then they pause while they plant soybeans, and then they resume planting corn later on in December. So the corn problem that we have at the moment from dryness is mainly due to that first 25% of the crop that's been planted. It needs some pretty big rains, and at least over the near term tide, it's going to get a little bit worse. High temperatures will be well into the 90s and the 100s over most of the next 10 days. And because of that, we're going to see evaporation rates be very high for this time of the year. Once we get beyond the next 10 days, a cool front is going to pass. That is an important event because it should trigger some storms here and there. The way it looks right now, we'll see about 1 inch of rain 10 to 14 days out. And while that might sound pretty good, they normally would see about 2 to 2.5 inches of rain over the next 14 days. So even if that rain event happens, it's still going to be way drier than normal for the upcoming 2 week period. That leads us into the second half of December. It's very early to start talking about weather in that period of time. It's just a little bit too far out. But the point here is that there are some serious concerns about Argentina weather. And even though most of the growing season still lies pretty far into the future, this is not a good start.
Moving northward through parts of Paraguay and Brazil, are conditions different?
Well, they're certainly better. We've been seeing rains here and there over the last couple of months, and that's been timing out pretty well with early corn planting as well as soybean planting and development. Now, the only thing is that it is a little bit drier than normal in some areas, and so we do need to see some rain start showing up pretty quickly because those crops are much more advanced than in Argentina. Now, there is rain coming up over the next couple of weeks. It's a bit difficult to determine exactly how much we're going to see with this setup, but it looks to be fairly close to normal over the next couple of weeks. If that turns out to be the case, then we'll still need to see more rains later on in December and in January to have some pretty nice corn and soybean crops. But at least at the moment, concerns are lower in Brazil than they are in Argentina. The only potential exception might be in far southern areas. Parts of Rio Grande do Sul, as well as Paraguay, are going to be pretty hot as heat in Argentina occasionally expands into those regions. But their corn is only about to turn sensitive, so that crop should be somewhat able to withstand this for the time being. And soybeans are still being planted that far to the south. So again, it's a little bit early to be overly concerned about this. But again, the point here is that we need to see the weather stabilize and then stay stable for the next 1 to 2 months, or we'll have to start thinking more about Brazil.
Here in the United States, I'd like to talk about some of the dry weather conditions in the western part of the U.S., especially in the hard red winter wheat growing regions. I know we're going into the winter months, but it is very dry. Are you concerned about conditions?
Well, we're concerned with how dry it is, and that's certainly reflected in the low condition ratings that we have for the winter wheat crop in the plains. This lack of rain started more than 6 months ago, and by several measures, it's one of the worst droughts of the last 40 years across western Kansas. So that's the key producing region for the United States for wheat. They're in a fairly major drought. Going forward, there's very few rain or snow chances on the horizon. So this drought is going to continue right into the middle of December. One thing to keep in mind is that it's very difficult to break a drought in the plains at this time of the year. Their climate is typically fairly dry from December through February, and then only starts to break a little bit in the month of March.
Hey, thank you much, Mike. That's Mike Tenera. He is at T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.